with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. My name is Bob Dancer. I'm the only host tonight. Usually Richard Munchkin joins me, but he's out of town and not in a place where he can phone in. But since our guests will be talking mainly about video poker, that's a subject I should be able to handle without Munchkin's help. We shall see. Or rather, you shall hear. Our guest tonight was supposed to have been sports handicapper Jason Bean. Jason needed to postpone for personal reasons. We'll be talking to Jason in a few months. Our guest tonight is a man I'm calling Old Timer, although he's younger and better looking than I am. Old Timer has been playing high-stakes video poker for almost a decade, longer than I have. He's been a friend for almost 18 years by my calculation, and he and I are going to be talking about video poker in the good old days. Old Timer, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks, Bob. Glad to be here.
In the news, there was some surprising something that happened at the Horseshoe Casino in Cincinnati, Ohio. They had a promotion where they promised to give away $1 million on a particular night in a contest where you did not have to be present to win. They drew the winner's name, Kevin Lewis. Kevin was there. They checked his ID, and amid a lot of hoopla and picture taken, they paid Kevin his money. The trouble is that the real winner was a different Kevin Lewis, who wasn't there last night, but he sure heard about it. When they discovered the mistake, the casino had some choices to do. They ended up paying both players $1 million. I have several comments on this. First, it boggles the mind how the wrong guy was paid in the first place. Whenever sizable prizes are given away, there are several vice presidents there to watch over things, and somebody very competent and reliable checks the ID, often double-checking by somebody else. A total rewards number is 11 digits long. I suppose it's theoretically possible that two players had very similar numbers and been starting in the seventh position. One was 9-8 and the other one was 8-9, but the numbers were otherwise identical. I mean, that is possible, but it's not very likely. Usually you can tell at a glance that two total rewards numbers are different. Second, obviously they had to pay the real winner, and it was smart to give the first guy something. I would have thought that paying the first guy only $1 million would have been good enough. The casino would still get great publicity out of it, and here they paid $250,000 to somebody who didn't really win, and players are likely to conclude that this is a good place to play. Now, I haven't seen pictures of the winners. If the two Kevin Lewis's are of different races, the casino could have been in a spot if they paid different amounts. Headlines such as "Casino takes money away from black man and gives it to white man" would have been a public relations nightmare and cost the casino way more than $1 million in terms of lost revenue from whichever race was slighted. Still, the Horseshoe is a Harrah's property, now called a Caesar's property. That casino corporation is in financial difficulty and has been cutting back on everything. Them paying out an extra $1 million was rather jaw-dropping. Old Timer, when you first heard about this, what did you think?
Well, I had two thoughts in my mind. One, I would have loved to have been there to witness this spectacle. And two, I wish I had some form of documentation that said my name was Kevin Lewis. Because apparently, if you have that name, you were in like Flint on that particular night. I'm a little surprised that they actually paid the full million to the incorrect person. Clearly, it was a mistake. It should have never happened. But in my gambling career, there's another individual running around Las Vegas that has my name. And we've had small things that have gone my way when they should have gone to him or vice versa. I'm shocked that they felt they needed to do that, but it clearly, from a PR standpoint, you couldn't have asked for much more.
Well, would they have gotten the same PR from a quarter million?
To some people, it would make them happy if the incorrect individual who was announced as the winner and or who seemed to provide information that was substantial enough to the casino, if he got anything less than a million, some people would never be happy. But I think a lot of people would say, "Come on, it's a mistake." It's just hard to understand. Like you say, there are so many factors that should have been looked at, so many things that are specific to the idea of the real guy. It is just unfathomable that this could have happened. But being that it did, I think you couldn't have asked them to do anything more. It even was admitted and brought to our attention. Perhaps that could have been kept hidden, but probably not.
Oh, if you're going to pay this extra million, you better broadcast and get as much PR as out of it as you can.
That's true.
All right, let's talk about video poker in the good old days. Video poker teams used to be more prevalent than they are now. So how is team play different in, say, the early 90s than it is 20 years later?
Well, in the early 90s, teams were everywhere. When it came to progressive video poker in particular, which was what I sort of focused on, it was very hard to just get one seat. That's all I wanted. I was by myself. I wasn't part of a team. But to try to get that one seat when there were teams out there whose goal it was to lock up every single machine on a progressive bank was very difficult. So I sort of had to get on earlier than the teams would. And some of them use more aggressive techniques than others to get you off.
Like what?
Well, let's start with the mildest is simply, "Hey, listen, if you give up your seat, I was lucky on that machine," they would say, "the last time I was in town. How about $50 or $100? And you can walk away right now a winner." And I would always say, "No, no, thank you. I really like this. I'm going to be here to play."
But for $3,000, the machine is yours.
Of course. And many times, that was my joke for 20 years ago, is, "You know what? As soon as this jackpot gets hit, I'm going to look you up. Can I have your number?" But nevertheless, some of them got more aggressive, and the only ones that really worried me were the ones that sort of threatened you, implied threats. And if I may speak a moment about a fellow who really was different than anybody else, I call him Knucklehead Nick.
Knucklehead Nick.
Yeah, Knucklehead Nick was a young, good-looking guy who always seemed to be in the company of older women with money. And he saw the video poker knowledgeable players, whether it be team or playing as individuals, making money, and he thought that looks like fun. But he didn't have the money, and he really didn't have the knowledge to play accurately. So what he did is he got money from one of the rich ladies he was seeing, and that bankrolled him, and he decided he would win by intimidation, by threatening people, basically, that they would really be better off if they got off the machine. And I was just waiting.
How would this work?
Well, for the one that happened to me, and it wasn't directly with me. I was with a friend, and we were playing at the Gold Strike. Gold Strike is about halfway between the Nevada border and Las Vegas. Actually, it's only about 10 miles from the border. And we were playing on a 50-cent progressive, and it was about $5,000.
Whereas the normal Royal on a 50-cent machine is $2,000.
$2,000. And it, being 8-5 jacks or better, it needed to be $4,400 to be technically a break-even point. So most of the teams would like to see $6,000 before they would want to get on that bank. But Knucklehead Nick decided he wanted to come in, and I was already there with my buddy. And we were the only ones on the bank, and one of Knucklehead Nick's cronies came up to the two of us, put his arm around our shoulders, and said, "Gentlemen, Knucklehead Nick would really appreciate it if you would play some of these other fine machines in this establishment." And before I could say a word, my friend, who was not a terribly big guy, but he was in the Air Force and a very serious fellow, and he let that person know. He said, "Why don't you let Knucklehead Nick know that he can have our machines and all the rest of these as soon as this jackpot is hit, and not a moment before." So he walked away, and I said, "You do know who Knucklehead Nick is. We're going to get a visit here in a minute." He says, "Let him come over." So the fellow came back and said, Knucklehead Nick would like to make you a little more generous offer. How about $50 a person? Right now, guys. You know, what's the chance you're going to hit this thing? $100 and you walk away. And that's when my friend got a little more stern with him, and he said, why don't you tell Knucklehead Nick to come on over, and I'll tell him directly, because apparently you're not conveying it accurately. We're not leaving. And you know what? He never came over. And the word spread that all you got to do is stand up to this guy. But there were a number of individuals, especially some of the older players, who didn't want a hassle, who didn't want a guy who, you know, might yell at you or shove you. And they walked away, and I hate to tell you how many machines Knucklehead Nick was able to get through that method.
So I've heard that there were shoving incidents where he was kind of in the background, but he'd have cohorts institute a shoving incident. Do you know, do you remember any of those?
I do. One at the Flamingo. It was a dollar progressive, and there were only two machines. So that's always going to be tough to be able to grab those. And a friend of mine was on one of them, and I'm not sure who was on the second. And what Knucklehead Nick did is he sent in his crony to try a new technique that I hadn't seen before. The gentleman sat next to the friend of mine, who is an older person, and he spilled some coffee on him. And he apologized, and my friend said, you know, that looked like you did it on purpose. Could you just go away? You're not even playing. And the fellow started yelling at him, and he shoved him, and my friend shoved back, and sure enough, before you knew it, security was over there. They walked the two of them away, said, both you guys, get out of here. And as soon as the machine had a vacant seat, Knucklehead Nick came out from behind a pillar and conveniently sat down at the now available machine.
Amazing how that happened. Now, teams today try to disguise that they're teams. Casinos are generally not pro-team. But 20-some years ago, teams didn't hide.
No, they didn't. In fact, it was so obvious. My first experience with a team was at the Frontier. I saw a quarter progressive, probably one of the first progressives that I saw was high enough that a book I had read said you should look for $3,000 or more on 8-5 jacks or better. And it was $3,300. I've never forgotten it to this day. So I sat down, and there was an older woman, and there must have been eight other machines unoccupied. Within 20-30 minutes, here comes a group, which I later turned out to later learned was a team. They occupied every single machine, and here comes the team leader distributing rolls of quarters right out in the open, unabashedly passing them out to all of his team members. I still didn't put two and two together. I didn't know if they were relatives, or I just didn't think about it. But I soon realized the fellow that was sitting next to me was playing about three times as fast as I was. He didn't seem to have to think about any hand. He knew what to do, no matter what cards were dealt to him. So I said, excuse me, you seem like you really know this game. What would you do with this hand? And I show him a hand I might have on my machine. And he says, boy, that's a tough one. I'm not sure which way I'd play that. And I had another question maybe 20 minutes later, same fellow, same answer. Finally, when he gave me the same answer for the third time, I said, look, it's obvious you know how to play this game. Is it a big deal for you to tell me? There's no way to get the royal flush on this hand. It's not hurting you. What's going on? He says, keep your voice down. And sure enough, here comes the team leader running around, and he says, listen, these people play for me. When this thing gets hit, I'll tell you how it works. So I shut up. And by the way, the person who hit that wasn't me, and it wasn't the team. It was that little old lady who had nothing to do with all of us. But that's where I got my education on how teams work. And yes, they pretty much handed the money out. They handed the records of how much each person won or lost. It was pretty much done in front of almost every casino I can think of. It was so absurdly open that at the Circus one time, I hit a jackpot, a dollar progressive for around $9,000 or $10,000, and one of the managers said, are you playing with a team? And I was almost afraid to answer, but I said, I'm not. I'm not quite sure what that is, but why do you ask? He says, oh, well, if you're playing with a team, we'd like to cut separate checks for all of you so you don't have to split the cash right here in the casino. I'll never forget that, and I wouldn't try that today, by the way, mentioning that you're part of a team. Could you have six or seven separate checks the next time you hit a jackpot?
Wow. Now, what I remember on a team, a story I heard possibly from you several years ago, was the Frontier used to have a promotion where if you get the first five numbers of your video, of your Social Security number, on the as cards on the machine, you get a $500 bonus. Now, I played that as an individual, but do you remember how the teams attacked that one?
Well, the biggest team owner, we'll call him Tommy Team.
Tommy Team.
Tommy Team. He was absurdly large, 50, 60 people at one point. I heard he put notes under windshield wipers. Would you like to play video poker for a living? Call me. So he had every person he could drag up and teach how to play. And so he would take a promotion and beat it to death, or as a friend of mine says, pigs get slaughtered. And when it came to that promotion, there were about 10 machines, as I recall, 10 quarter single line machines, and Tommy Team looked at the social security numbers of every one of his players. Now, I think you can follow, I'm sure your listeners can follow me on this, but the idea is to have the greatest chance of succeeding in this promotion, of getting your five cards to match the first five numbers of your social security number, would be to have different numbers. If your number is 55555, you're out of luck right there. You're not going to find five fives in the deck. So he would take those people that had the strongest chance, those with the most, you want five different numbers is what you want. And then he put those 10 people and tied up every machine at the frontier. But that wasn't good enough for Tommy Team. That alone would have given him an edge. He actually had the 10 social security numbers, or at least the first five digits, of each individual written on a piece of paper, and they put that piece of paper on everybody's machine in plain view. The idea is, if you get any of these combinations, you get up from your machine. The fellow on the bank who has the social security number that matches that, he sits down, raises his hand, and claims to be a $500 winner. Well, I stumbled upon this by accident, and I saw the changing of seats, and I was absolutely flabbergasted that the frontier did not see what was happening. People were getting paid. And so to me, that is one of the most unbelievable promotions. It was good enough by itself, but to think that they allowed that little technique to be used unabashedly once again with the numbers clearly displayed, nobody was holding it in their pocket. I think they tried to memorize so they could play at a reasonable speed. But anyways, that's how that memorable promotion went as far as I recall.
Today, that would last about an hour or something. Too long. All right. Now, at the Sahara, the now dearly departed Sahara, they used to have a 12 Days of Christmas program where they were giving away a Chevy Blazer. But you got tickets in a weird way. How did that work?
Well, it was called the 12 Days of Christmas. And the idea was that for the 12 days leading up to Christmas, the Sahara was going to give away a Chevy Blazer, one winner a night. That's the only person that would win something. And as you say, the unusual way that you would earn tickets for this was based on emptying the hopper. You got to remember, back then, the machines, they had bill acceptors at this point in time. Of course, the earliest machines didn't. They had bill acceptors, but no ticket dispensers, no ticket acceptors. So when you were done playing, you cashed out. Well, it only took about 6 seconds, I think, for a lot of us to realize that, isn't that emptying the hopper? I mean, they didn't say you had to, you know, hit a royal flush, which would dump out 4,000 quarters or 4,000 nickels. They just said empty the hopper. So a couple of my friends went in there and said, what harm can it be? Let's try it. So sure enough, he puts a $100 bill in, a nickel machine, hits the cash out button. The machine tries to cash out 2,000 nickels. It runs out. He calls a guy over, and sure enough, the guy gives him a ticket. And there, everybody was absolutely astonished. You've got to be kidding me. Here's a promotion where you don't just play the best game in the house. You don't have to play any game at all. You're basically cashing out your $100 bill for nickels. So strategically, they took up machines that were far apart from each other, so you wouldn't have two or three of these people doing it right next to each other. And when one guy does it at one end of the casino, another guy 50 feet away would cash out his $100 bill. And there it went. And I would say that of the 12 Blazers, I had one friend that won two of them. I had another friend that won three of them. I think about seven of them went to people using this insane technique. And yes, it did last the entire 12 days. Try that today. I not only would the promotion be over, you probably wouldn't be allowed to set foot in that place, but it did not specifically violate the rules. It emptied the hopper.
Wow. I have a couple of Sahara stories, but we'll save those for some other day. Now, Sam's Town used to have a promotion where you got, if you got four cards to the Royal, you would get a rack of coins. Now, a rack of coins, if you're playing a dollar machine, is $100.
And right.
So it's usually 100 coins. So how do you remember off the top of your head how often do you get four to the Royal?
You end up with four to the Royal about 80 to 90 times in a Royal flush cycle. So basically, if we look at an 8-5 jacks or better game, let's say a quarter game where you're going to, or let's say a dollar game where you're going to lose $8,800 on the average to hit that Royal, you're basically going to get back all that loss by this promotion. It's not going to cost you anything to hopefully win that $9,000 progressive jackpot. So it was obviously a very good play, but you didn't have to play a progressive on this one. You could have just played a 9-6 jacks or better and have a pretty nice edge, and they had lots of them at Sam's Town. Not only did it take everybody, I mean, other casinos where I normally played, I actually was in the Mirage when I heard about this, they were empty, and I couldn't figure out where is everybody, and then I got the word, Sam's Town. Well, not only did they give this rack of coins away, but they had $5 machines. Okay, so you figure five coins, a $25 bet, you're going to get $500 every time you finish a hand with four to the Royal. Well, the problem is their $5 machines only took three coins. That's only $15 a bet, and they still gave you a full rack of $5 coins.
Wow.
So I don't think was a very good day for Sam's Town, but a great day for players.
Wow, and it lasted the whole day.
Yeah, as far as I remember, it did. I actually think it might have been the last half of the day from 6 p.m. till midnight, if I'm not mistaken. But it did last the entire time.
Now, when the Rio opened up, they had this nice promotion about doubling four of a kinds. That must have cost them a bunch. Do you know anything about that?
I do know about it, and I wish I could tell you I was part of it, because it's probably the promotion that I regret the most to this day, because it would have been a lot of fun. But I had business in California, and I could not make it, but I salivated at the thought of playing in it. What the Rio did, like many casinos, they have a soft opening where the doors are actually open to the public and you can come in and play. And then I can't remember how many weeks later they had the grand opening, well publicized. And sure enough, they said all four of a kinds on video poker would be doubled. Now, anybody that knows a little about the mathematics of video poker knows that a four of a kind represents about 6% of your total win. So you take a game that's paying back 99.5%, and you give the player 6% on top of that. Wow. So the funny part was the players knew they were going to have to get their machine early. So they staked out, I think, just about every machine in the place, especially Tommy Team. He certainly took his share of the big denomination machines. And they took these machines about 12 hours before the promotion started. So you don't want to just sit there and not play something. So they would talk to each other, play one coin here or there. They were so casual about it. And the moment midnight struck, when the promotion took effect, everybody began playing like there was no tomorrow. And, of course, the moment you hit a four of a kind, you raise your hand, and an attendant will be over to give you the same amount of money that the machine has given you. Or in the case of a hand pay, to simply double it. And like I say, I wasn't there, but I heard it was quite a spectacle. And in the beginning, it appeared that the Rio was delighted with the response they had from their brilliant promotion. The place was packed and people were playing so excited. And I believe it was about 8 or 10 hours later where somebody started crunching some numbers and said, I don't think this is working out too well for us. And it was put to an end. But my favorite part of the story was I knew what had happened. I knew it was over. But I called in from California, and I said, I'm thinking of coming out. They were supposed to run this promotion like 4 or 5 days. I said, I'm coming out for your four-of-a-kind double promotion. You are still having that, are you? Aren't you? And the young lady who answered actually said, well, we are, but we've changed it a little bit. We think it's a little more exciting. And I played along, and I said, really, what are you going to do now? She said, well, every day for the rest of this week, we're going to spin a wheel, and that four of a kind is the one that gets doubled. I said, but isn't it better if you double all of them? She said, but this way, you never know which four of a kind you have to get. It makes it a lot more exciting. And I laughed. I had to hang up before I laughed too much in her face. But anyways, that was the famous Rio, and word was they lost somewhere in the $400,000 range.
She can't figure out why 0.5% isn't as good as 6%.
No.
That's tough math. Okay, well, the Texas station had a similar kind of promotion at one place, and so I spoke to the slot director years later, and when he realized he had made a huge mistake, then the philosophy was pay them, but pay them slowly.
Yes.
And so you could be there and hit your four of a kind and then wait 2.5 hours.
You're to be absolutely paid. Right. That's the figure I was going to give you. I had heard people who waited for several hours with their light flashing on their machine, and you're dead in the water until they bring you that money. So, yeah.
And a couple people can get cranky about that. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Now, the Hard Rock had a similar promotion with hand pays being doubled.
Right. And this one was, I guess they thought this would help stimulate the business for the new nightclub. I believe it's called Babies, if it's still there to this day. And the idea was, if you come to the grand opening of Babies, take your ticket stub after the party's over, and for, it was only a few hours, four at most, as I recall, and you show that stub when you hit a hand pay jackpot, and they'll double it. Well, this is probably the first promotion I can think of where knowledgeable video poker players all of a sudden became knowledgeable slot players, because you play a $100 machine, frankly, it doesn't guarantee you to walk away a winner, but can you imagine hitting a $400,000 slot jackpot and they had to double it? I don't remember if there was a limit on how big you could hit one to have it doubled, but it wasn't just one, as some casinos have done. It was every hand pay jackpot for the remaining 4 hours would be doubled. Need I say, another disaster that you wonder, how does a marketing individual get that job without a clue as to what that will do to their bottom line for that night?
Something similar happened at the Desert Inn, and it was actually when I first had I first knew who Old Timer was. I had heard his name and people spoken about various things, but I didn't put a face with it. As I recall, the promotion is they had a slot tournament that cost $200 or $300 to enter, and if you entered it, then for the entire 2 or 3 days you got double points. And at that time they had a 1% slot club, and they had plenty of 9-6 jacks or better for, if you include $5 machines and higher, probably 30 of them. And so 9-6 jacks is a 99.5% game, and you put a 2% slot club on it, it's a very juicy deal. So
it is, and my memory jives exactly with your memory. That's exactly what I recall. Most of my friends were on the $5, 9-6 jacks are better. There were two $100 denomination machines. One of them was a 3-coin machine. The Royal was $240,000. One of them was a 5-coin machine with a Royal of $400,000. Now, it didn't take long to figure out the better value was the 3-coin, because you would not have to stop for a taxable on 3-of-a-kind. You needed to get a straight or better. That little difference meant a lot more money being pumped through the machine, because you wouldn't have to wait for as many jackpots. And if I may say, that was also the next time that I have been intimidated on a machine, because a gentleman took the 5-coin machine, didn't want it, I was on the 3-coin, and I was waiting until the appropriate time when the double points would start. And he made a big scene, this fellow, and said, if you're not going to play it, I will. You take my machine, I'll play yours. I said, no, that's okay. I'll start playing it. I started playing it, but apparently it wasn't fast enough for him. And he felt he was more deserving, because he would give it the kind of play right now on single points that the casino wanted. And I let him know that I didn't normally throw my weight around, but I said, I'm a pretty good-sized player here. I don't know who you are, but I said, if I need to get a manager, I'll do that, but leave me alone. And he said, you're not going to do that. You're going to get off the machine, or I can make it bad for you. So I Didn't know who this fellow was, but I got on the phone to a friend of mine, and he seemed to know big players who came in from out of state for these type of video poker promotions. And when I described him, he said, "You're not going to believe this, but that fellow is a judge, and he has a pretty big ego and thinks he is going to get his way." And I said, I'm sorry, but I'm not giving him my machine." To make a long story short, I didn't give it to him, and he eventually calmed down, and I've seen him maybe once since. But the idea of a judge coming practically unglued is something that I have never forgotten to this day.
Turns out probably on that machine, a $25 machine would have been a better play yet, since you only get hand pays on four of a kinds and higher. You probably would end up getting more coin in on a $25 machine than on a $100 machine. I don't know that. I was playing a $5 machine. This was probably 94, 95. I was playing a three-coin $5 machine and scared to death, because at $15 a hand, that was big game for me. And I'd only been playing a little while, and I was pretty scared. But and ended up losing. I didn't hit a royal, and so I ended up down. But that was kind of exciting. I saw these big players just hammering away, and I was like, wow.
It was fun. I didn't hit a royal either, by the way, but it was still an exciting play that I looked forward to for weeks.
Yes. Now, Sunset Station, several casinos used to have a procedure when you had coin dropping machines that if you got a hand pay, they would salt the machine with five coins so you get started again. So now they sometimes say, "Please play it off." Well, now they didn't do it then, because they put in the five coins, which automatically played it off. So several casinos did that. But then Sunset Station put in a $100 game. So every time you got a hand pay of three of a kind or higher, you got an extra $500. Now, did you hear about this one?
I did, and I my tip my hat to the fellows who found this, because I considered myself a pretty good scout. I checked promotions. I missed this one, and it's the sort of thing that I would have loved to have been part of. I had never heard that term, salting the machine, but I know what you're talking about, and it doesn't mean much when you hit a dollar progressive for $10,000, and they're going to give you $5. But, yeah, who would have thought that on a $500 a hand machine, every time you get three of a kind or better, that they're going to go ahead and put $500 extra in for you? That was unbelievable. But I think you actually had the sad ending to that tale, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, I heard that it's impossible to lose on that promotion. And, of course, the players did. the casino killed it after doing it a few times, and they just ran bad for the players ran bad for 20 minutes, and it was over, and ended up losing several thousand dollars. But I have a similar story, not that size, at the Luxor. They had a $10 9-6 jacks machine, but for whatever reason, full houses, which is only $450, generated hand pay. And so you got an extra $50 for every full house.
Oh, wow.
I lost on that one, too.
That it's one I didn't know about.
It's impossible to lose, but I managed it. All right. So now, sometimes things are different at small casinos than they are at large casinos. Now, the Hooters, which was we called San Remo, before that it was called something else. That's not an extremely small casino, but it's small enough. So you got a story about that one.
I do. And like you said, before Hooters, it was called San Remo. But before San Remo, it was a small casino. And I'm sorry I don't recall the name of it, but back in the day, I took pride in the fact that I would check out the smaller places that a lot of the teams would not, and I could play undisturbed and still find some good promotional values. So I went in there with a friend of mine, and it was a dollar progressive at the bar. And to be honest with you, it wasn't the kind of number that we should have planned on spending much time. But he said, "I want to have a little fun." And we didn't know any other dollar progressive. I think it was 8-5 jacks or better. It was only about $92 or $9,300. $8,800 is the break even. So, and it's nothing special. You don't care about getting a room at this place, and you don't even care about getting a free meal. He just wanted to have some fun, so I played alongside of him. Well, he hits the royal for about $9,350. No big deal. Okay, good for you, let's get your money and get out of here. And they said, the owner's out of town. And my friend said, yeah. Well, he's on a skiing trip. And my friend said, yes. Well, you won't be able to get paid until the owner gets back from his skiing trip on Sunday. And this was like Wednesday. My friend said, are you crazy? You're telling me you don't have $9,300 in this place? They said, no, but you're going to get paid. So he said, no, this is crazy. You tell the owner, he's got to pay me. So they called the owner on his skiing trip, and he tried to persuade. They put my friend on the phone with him, and he tried to persuade him that you're going to get paid. I'll make it up to you by giving you a dinner for two at our steakhouse or whatever. He says, this is crazy. I want my money, or I'm calling gaming. So the guy says, okay, I'm giving up my trip right now to come in and pay you, all right? I am driving in, but I'm not going to be there for 4 or 5 hours, all right?
That's not very far. He must have been, what, Big Bear? I mean, where is he going to be in 4 or 5 hours?
You know, I don't remember, but I absolutely remember that time period because I told my friend, I hope you're not going to be upset with me. I think it's ridiculous that you're going to stay, but I'm not staying here to watch you get paid in 5 hours. He says, don't worry about it. And I talked to him the next day. He waited. He sat there at the bar drinking some free drinks they kept him drinking. And sure enough, when the owner shows up, 11 o'clock at night, he opens up his wallet and gives him $9,356 or whatever it was, and they hand him the W-2. But that gives you an idea of how things might be handled a little differently in a small casino than in a larger one. I'm not sure that that would fly too well with somebody who hits a jackpot at Bellagio these days.
Well, it wouldn't. Well, I've hit, I've told people, Dottie's used to be a sponsor here, and I've hit $25,000 jackpots and $100,000 jackpots at Dottie's.
Wow.
And it's going to be a check. And they got to call somebody to get the money, and it's going to be a while because that's kind of like a route. And so, so when it happens, I've just got to, I talked to them on the phone. Why don't I come back at blah, blah, blah time tomorrow, and I want the check. And they all say, fine. And so I come back the next day, and everything's cool. But it can take a while if it's on a route. Now, safety in casinos. We briefly mentioned a little bit people getting roughed up by Knucklehead Nick or something. But sometimes safety is an issue in casinos. Do you have any experiences in that area?
Well, fortunately, I myself have not had any negative experiences. But anybody that's played as long as I have, as careful as you may be, and I've gotten knowledge from some of the most varied of people on how to be safe, and yet the individual that has told me some of the most critical tips on how to be safe was the victim of probably the worst crime that I know of regarding a video poker player. This friend hit a jackpot at the Rainbow Club. It's a small casino over in Henderson.
Downtown on Water Street.
Yes, somewhere in the $6,000 range. And thought he was being as careful as could be, but he did take cash and went to his home. Unbeknownst to him, he was followed. And the fellows came up to his front door of his condo. He opened the door, and they leveled a shotgun at him. Told him, don't even try to close that door because he's not going to be as fast as they are. They told him they knew what he had hit, and they not only want that money, but they're going to check his place, and if they find one other dollar bill, they're going to kill him. So he was, needless to say, petrified, as we all would be, and he did. He gave them everything he had in the place. That's what he told me. And he was out of the game for probably 7 or 8 months. And I could understand that. Something like that could really shake you up. So there have been a handful of other incidents, but that's got to be the most unpleasant that I'm aware of. The friend of mine I told you about earlier that was sitting with me when Knucklehead Nick tried to get us off the machine, his daughter worked at Circus Circus, and she was accosted at knife point on her way to her car at Circus Circus. But she didn't have much honor. She was a blackjack dealer. She gave what she had and so forth. Fortunately, no one's been frightened any more than those two individuals. I know of a few women that have been shoved down and fell on the steps leading out of, I think, the Aladdin, and their purse was grabbed. So there's no question that you have to be concerned for your safety. And 20 years ago, there were a lot of people for a potential burglar to sort of pick the weakest link or the one that looks like they might be able to be victimized. So today I don't think that's as much of a concern because, frankly, there aren't the kind of plays that there were 20 years ago where lots of people are hoarding lots of cash with them while they play.
Well, I actually disagree on the latter part. There are a lot more $5 and higher machines now. Playing $5 machines is not such a big deal today as it was 20 years ago. And there's, you know, the strip casinos have $25 machines and $25 10-play machines.
That's true, although I always think people like that, I know this isn't the case, but I think people like that are using credit lines. But I did witness a man at the MGM Grand hit a $180,000 jackpot on a slot machine and was paid in cash. They took the cash was wrapped with plastic, but you could clearly see this mountain of cash with a knot tied around it, and he would just move it on the machine next to him as he moved around the high limit room. And everybody who worked there, nobody said to him, "Sir, would you like?" At least I didn't see it, but I was scared for him. But yes, you're right. $5 is far more commonplace than it was. It was nickel and dollar. Dollars was the big guys back 25 years ago.
I remember a lot of coin dropping machines where you could not play without getting your hands filthy with, I mean, actually nickels are for whatever reason a lot dirtier than quarters. I never figured out why, but if you're playing nickels, your hands get a lot dirtier than we're playing quarters. So that was pretty common back then.
Yeah, that's one thing I think the players today, I don't know if they would have the stamina or realize what it was like to play a machine for hours where you had to, you know, slip in five coins, and then after you got your full house on your dollar machine, you had to wait for $45 coins to fall into your tray with a cacophony of noise that made you want to wear earmuffs. And this is what you would go through hand after hand after hand. And if you were good, maybe you could play 300 hands an hour. And today, depending on the machines with turbo, you can do over 1,000 hands an hour. But yes, I played at Circus Circus on many dollar progressives. They had three banks I knew of. And to have my fingers black, always, to have my hands blistered many times, I can't even believe that we put ourselves through that. But the money was right, the jackpots were exciting, the meter movement was far greater than it was today, and you even had a player's card at that point. But the pains of delivering those coins to the machine and how many coins would get stolen, it was just typical. You would get stolen so many an hour. And I know when it came to Tommy Team, he figured out exactly how many dollars your machine could steal in an hour where you should just let it go. And that was most of the time. Because if you asked to have it looked at or fixed, your machine's out of commission, and that might be a machine that could generate a $40 an hour profit. It's not worth it except the $2 or $3 an hour that it's stealing from you.
Yeah, when you finish playing, you might have three or four racks of dollars where each rack is $100, and you take them to the change booth to get them converted into bills, and so you might have lost $4,000, but you have these $500 worth of coins, and people are coming up to you go, "Wow, you're the luckiest player I've ever seen. What machine were you playing? I want to play that machine."
Yep, I have heard it all, and many times if I'm leaving, that means the jackpot got hit, so I point it right out to him. That one right there. Knock yourself out. Good luck with that. But, you know, you also had the headache. You carry these coins up. They don't just take the racks and hand you $300. They've got to put them in a coin counter. And the machine rolls the coins around, and it seemed with my luck, that always filled the bag. Now the bag has to be wrapped and tied, a new fresh bag. All you want to do is play, and so much of the time was involved with feeding machines or getting your money back from the coins. That's one area where it's a lot more fun to play the games today.
It is. All right. This actually has been fascinating. It takes me back memory lane. Some of you who've been playing for years remember stories like this. Some of you who haven't been playing that long, hopefully you found them interesting. Thank you, old timer. Let's go back and do this again.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks for having me.
The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. That's more than anybody else. They'll have daily drawings for 25,000 at 8:10 p.m. in the Grandview Lounge every day in August. There'll be one prize of $10,000 and 15 prizes of $1,000 each. To get the $10,000, you have to be drawn first and be present within 4 minutes of your name being called. Otherwise, your name will go on the $1,000 list and the next name will be called, who'll have 4 minutes to collect the prize. Eventually, someone will claim the $10,000, and the rest of the 15 $1,000 winners have 24 hours to pick up their prize. If they don't pick it up within 24 hours, it's forfeited. There have been a few $1,000 ones forfeited, but not many. Players may earn up to 1,000 entries each day, which means, and it's $1 coin in per entry from 3 a.m. to 8 p.m. At the end of the drawing, all of the entries are thrown away and they start again for the next night. In previous South Point drawings, your ticket stayed in the barrel all month long. That gave an advantage to local players who could show up every day. Not so this time. If you can play $1,000 coin in and be there at 8:10 p.m., you'll have as good of a chance as anybody else for that night. Now, it's not a great chance, but and there'll be likely be a couple thousand other people trying for this prize every night, but it's a better chance for a decent prize than low rollers can get almost anywhere else. The free video poker classes will begin September 10th at noon in the showroom. The first class will be Jacks or Better. If you're at least 21, you are welcome. At the Palms, there are drawings at 8 p.m. Friday and Saturday evenings with the theme of $125,000 big deal. The first five winners win between $500 and $5,000, depending on which envelope they select. The winners 6 through 10 receive $500 and they're done. There's a buyout possibility. If you get called in the top five, you may take a guaranteed $650 instead of going for it where you have half a chance, five chances to get 500 and five chances to get more than 500, but it includes up to 5,000. I don't think anybody's taking the guarantee. Now, if they made it an $800 guarantee, it would still be a good bet to pass the guarantee and gamble it up. But at that price, some people would take the guarantee. On Friday nights between 8 p.m. and midnight, you receive five times drawing tickets for these drawings. PEW, Play, Earn, and Win, on Monday, Wednesday, Friday for the first half of the month, which officially ends tomorrow, August 16th, has the theme of automobile. The top prizes are Chevron gas cards. You can earn up to $175 of gas cards a day. You can earn jumper cables, car cleaning supplies, etc. For the second half of the month, which starts Monday, the theme will be pigskin, which most of the gifts are related to football somehow, although the top prize is a $100 Albertsons gift card. I'm not sure how Albertsons relates to football, but it does. The points you earn on Monday, Wednesday, Friday may be saved up and used later in the week. At videopoker.com, daily contests for the next several days will be as follows. Tomorrow, Friday, August 16th, triple play draw poker. Saturday, August 17th, 100 play with quick quads. Sunday, August 18th, extra draw frenzy poker. These daily contests have a modest $50 first prize, but plus an entry into the Tournament of Champions. Once a month for 7 or 8 days, at the end of the month, they have tournaments with a $500 first prize. They haven't announced the game of choice for August yet, but by next week we'll have it. These are especially good for people. Now, I live in Las Vegas, so a $50 prize by playing at home isn't that attractive. There are a lot of our listeners who don't live near a casino. And so you do get to play, get to experience new games with no chance of losing because they're all free. These contests are also a good way for you to experiment with playing games you might not otherwise know. Like, do you know extra draw frenzy poker? Well, a lot of people don't really have known what that is. One of the biggest values of the site is you're able to practice a number of games for free so you can be ready when you go to the casino. They do have an email form at videopoker.com. It's not the same as the one at VP Free. I do participate in both to some degree. All right. Munchkin is going to be back next week. So we got a few minutes left, old timer. I want to talk about your scouting. When you used to come to town, you would spend a lot of time looking for new plays, more time than anybody else I ever heard of. Why don't you tell us about that?
Well, I did. I guess I love the game, and I love finding things. And most people I knew depended on somebody. I'll check this side of the strip, you check that side of the strip. And play after play I would hear about where somebody just didn't know what was going on, or they got the wrong information. I'm kind of a loner, and I says, I'm going to do this on my own. I think I can do this. So I had three places along the strip where I would park and make a pretty good long walk. The first place was in the Tropicana garage. I would check the Tropicana, divert to that casino which later became San Remo. There was a casino called the Marina down where the MGM is. I would walk quite a ways down, just about, believe it or not, to Flamingo. That's a pretty good walk. And then I have to walk the other side of the street. Well, I got to go back to my car anyways. So I had a path through the casinos where I would check progressives primarily, but I was always interested in new machines. You have to remember, back then, they didn't have machines with four denominations and 12 different choices of games. You didn't have to go through all that to see what that game offered. You pretty much looked at the machine, and you didn't even have to look at the monitor usually. The payoff table was usually printed on the back glass, so I could check an amazing amount of machines by just glancing, just to see if anything's changed. So anyways, I was able to do that, then move my car to what is now called Harrah's. It used to be called the Holiday, and then finally move my car to Circus Circus. And this scouting of the strip pretty much took about 4 hours. And the only reason I would deviate from that is if I knew of a progressive that is probably getting very close to attracting a lot of play, I want to check that first. But if I didn't know of anything like that, now it's time to get more info to plan for future trips or maybe even later that weekend.
So one of the is, you know, you need to have a lot of stamina for this, because if you don't have a team and you have to scout, well, you have to, however tired you get scouting, you still have to play. And whatever is the best play, then you have to go back and play that for however many hours you're going to play. And progressives, that can be 8 hours, 10 hours, 15 hours, or more. So most people would not, there are definitely economies of scale if you can do the north side of the street and I can do the south side of the street. Although I guess on the strip it would be east and west. So we have about a minute. Are there any special plays that you found while scouting that you're really proud of finding?
Well, I wish I could have said I played it at the larger level, but yes, I was going through Caesars at a time when there wasn't anything in Caesars that people checked, and I happened to be there when they wheeled in Joker's Wild machines at high denomination. I'm talking $25 three coin and $100 three coin. Joker's Wild, two pair, pays your even money. I think it's 102% return, and I was salivating waiting for them to activate those machines.
It's a hard-earned heck game to learn.
It is, but I had just recently learned it, and so I was anxious to try it, and I did get a chance to at the $25 level, and the people I was playing with won.
Wow. Very good. All right. Thank you, old timer. This was interesting. Good night, everybody. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.